As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Good morning and hello. Welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. I'm talking to you early Wednesday morning, rain out in the DMV, but hopefully everybody is basking in the glory of the Washington Commanders, the hottest team in the NFL. No hyperbole. This is the actual truth. 6-1 in their last seven games by winning percentage. There are other teams that have lost only one game as well, but by winning percentage, Washington has played the most games in that stretch and has the best record, and it is quite the journey, and a huge game, of course, this week, Sunday at New York, in which Washington, with a win, would pass the Giants in both the NFC East and the playoff standings. Joining me in a few minutes will be former Washington head coach Jay Gruden to share his thoughts on where this team is at. We'll get into some of the interesting topics with this group, you know, the quarterback situation. And I don't think we've talked about Tress Way with Jay, who just continues to be an incredibly valuable piece. We'll get to those things and a bunch more for sure with Jay in a few minutes. But of course, just a quick reminder, you can subscribe and find all my written work over on The Athletic. You can listen to this podcast ad-free there. You can, of course, follow me on Twitter at Ben Standing, and of course, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. All right, so let's just look ahead here a little bit to this week. Probably the biggest personnel question, I guess, is going to be the Chase Young saga, the injury return saga. It's now been over a year since he had not just the injury, but the surgery itself. Still no return. We thought we were close last week. Didn't quite get there. Combination, I think, of the knee. Still maybe not feeling it completely. Chase Young himself, meaning, you know, Ron Rivera has talked before, he needs to see a little more confidence from Chase Young. There was also the, he was also ill late in the week, over the weekend. So all that held on. You'll remember a couple weeks ago, or I shouldn't say a couple weeks ago, a couple episodes ago, I did an episode with Nikki Jabvala, and we talked about the idea of when do we think Chase Young will be back, before or after the bye week. And my guess was after the bye week, because it still didn't quite sound at that moment that, you know, that the knee was, everybody was completely confident in the knee. And then if he didn't play this past game, you're really going to play in New York on that terrible turf? Well, obviously he didn't play this week, although it did, I will say, on Friday, Ron Rivera's tone made it sound like it was more conceivable that he could get in a few snaps, and I had heard that a little bit elsewhere as well, but it ultimately didn't happen. If Rivera is saying the turf doesn't matter, meaning he's going to have to play at some point, then okay, then I guess he could be this week, but we'll see. I'll be very curious to see what happens. The crazy thing, of course, is I don't want to say they're not missing Chase Young, but relatively speaking, they're not missing Chase Young because of how well the defensive line is playing. Obviously, last week was unique for this group of late because of how well Atlanta ran the ball over 160 yards on the ground, and we'll talk to Jay if he thinks there's anything future opponents can learn in there from that to use against Washington. But that aside, obviously this group has played very well. Chase Young would come in and be a situational player at this point, and probably presumably would be for the rest of the year. But you know, of course, anything can any help would be great. And you know, based on potential, Chase Young is, you know, would certainly be a huge asset for this group. So we'll see how the week goes for him. But in terms of where the team is at, you know, a story I wrote this week on The Athletic was about Ron Rivera tried to tell us that year three was the year for this group to sort of make a bold move up, that this is what happened in Carolina after a couple of years of, you know, sort of, you know, underwhelming or you know, this developmental seasons, they shot up to a 12-win team in 2013, his third season with Carolina. He's made that third-year jump comment over and over again, going back to before the year even started. He did it even this season when they were at 1-4. And it always seemed to me to be, like, I'm not doubting his sincerity in believing that. It's just like, well, the quarterback scenario, right? You know, you had Cam Newton at that point, a rising young player who would become an MVP 2 years later, versus what was going on here, whether it was Carson Wentz at the time, or even if you, you know, factor in Taylor Heineke when he got in and they started to win a bit more. It's still hard to see how that was going to be a mirror, you know, image situation. Well, we're heading in that direction, and it is certainly impressive what they've been able to do. And you look at some of the numbers, particularly on defense. I tweeted some of this out the other day, but here are some of the growth that they've had. This is during this 7 week stretch where they're 6-1. The first start with Wentz, then the next six with Heineke. Turnover margin. You know, this group couldn't get, you know, they couldn't catch a turnover to save their life the first several weeks of the year. Now, turnover margin first in the league, plus +7 in through the last 7 weeks. Time of possession margin, second in the league, 7 minutes and 6 seconds. Rivera has said now that, you know, they sort of tipped their hand as to what they wanted to do this year with Brian Robinson back in preseason and how they were going to use the run game. I have some questions about that in the sense that it doesn't, like, if you were really going to be a run-first team, why did you draft a receiver in the first round? Why didn't you do a better job with the offensive line? But those quibbles aside, you know, you guys heard me talk about this months and months ago, that they wanted to sort of emulate that four-game winning streak last year. Time of possession was a huge factor, and a guy like Brian Robinson would indeed make a ton of sense for that. Points allowed, third at 15.43 a game. Yards allowed, also third, 284.6. Penalties, fifth at 4.86. I know there were a couple, you know, each game, you know, every team's going to have those one or two crusher penalties, whether it's a timing thing or a 15-yarder or pass interference or something. But in terms of just sheer numbers, and again, this is not just defense. This is offense, defense, and special teams. 4.86, that shows a lot of discipline, and good on them. And then one for the offense, three and out drives, the percentage of drives that ending in a three and out, fourth at 23.0. And, you know, obviously they're still not scoring a ton, but this is about the time of possession factor. Part of this is, of course, the Brian Robinson emergence, but it's also Taylor Heineke. He is more of a, you know, grind it out type quarterback than Carson Wentz, who is more boom or bust. So they're lacking the bigger play, perhaps, but they're being more, I don't know if efficient's the right word, I guess, but they're able to get those, you know, 4 and 5 yard, 6 yard plays, move the ball, move the chains, and that's helping, you know, it's a definition of complementary football for this group. So there's a lot there that is working. Now, of course, what's going to happen going forward here, right? At this point, again, I guess I didn't say from a personnel perspective, is Carson Wentz going to be active this week? You know, until he's actually on the roster, there is no decision for Ron Rivera to make. presumably, even if he is active this week, and we'll find out, I guess, later, if not today, meaning Wednesday, by Friday or Saturday, presumably, whether Wentz will be active. Even then, it looks like he'll be the backup. But, you know, here's where the offense is right now over these last 7 weeks. They're averaging 1.76 points per drive. Now, that's an improvement over where they were for the six games at 1.4, but it's still only 21st in the league. They're 22nd in red zone efficiency, 27th in yards per play, and also 27th in third down percentage. Look, getting the breaks is almost, I don't know if it's half the battle, but it's a huge part of the battle, whether you're talking about day-to-day life or winning football games. And for the most part, this team has gotten those. Now, they're making their own luck, whether that's Daron Payne tipping that pass at the end of last week to save the win. And by the way, if you haven't already heard, well, Michael Phillips and I broke down the Commanders' win last week, so you can check that out on the podcast feed, whether it's that. But then there's the Taylor Heinicke throws into triple coverage against the Vikings, and Curtis Samuel somehow still comes down with the touchdown, in part because one of the defenders ran into a referee, right? a pass gets thrown and it's intercepted, or should be intercepted right in the defender's hands. He drops the ball in the Houston game. You can't always explain these things, but we all remember when the bad things happen. You got to remember when the good things happen as well. They're creating their own luck. But at some point, you wonder, can the offense win you the game instead of just sort of being more of the supporting cast? And I think Ron Rivera, that's kind of what he hinted at this week as well when we spoke to him on Monday. Can the offense go to another level? And I don't know. That's the big question, right? What if, say, the Giants this week are able to copy some of Atlanta's run game, and with Saquon Barkley, obviously one of the better running backs in the league, get out to a 17-13 lead in the 17-3 lead in the third quarter, or something like that. And then you can't just rely on the run game. You have to start throwing the ball more. Can you get the ball going in that way? Obviously, we know they have the playmakers, and I'm not discounting Heinicke's ability to make some plays. I'm just saying, they've been a more conservative offense. Can that turn around? Fortunately, they're playing teams that are in the same boat. Atlanta, very similar type team. Obviously, Houston was pretty underwhelming. The Giants, they are 7-4. They've lost a couple in a row after their hot start. I still think the Giants are a really well-coached team, but at the same point, they don't have a lot of firepower themselves offensively, so they keep teams in games. So, if we're at the point where we're discussing how far can this go with Washington, I think that is probably the next step. Can the offense get to a point where it can win you games, not just be part of the ride-along program? Can you come back? Can you, take control in the offense when the defense is not doing enough? We will see. But hey, look, good times right now out in Ashburn. It's going to be a rainy day, it looks like, out there today. But again, the sun is shining down on this group for sure. We'll have plenty of more guests this week. I've already got a few more planned that I'm excited for you to hear from. But right now, let's get to the guy we hear from every week here on the podcast, former Washington head coach Jay Gruden, here on the Standard Room Only podcast.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS. You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
All right, as promised, joining us here as he does is former Washington head coach Jay Gruden. We're talking early on a Wednesday morning. Jay, you get, I don't know if you've ever seen my cat Lenny before. He's been yelling at me all morning, so he decided he wanted to be part of this. Do you have pets? I don't even know.
We got two cats. Yeah, back in Virginia. They're lovely. They meow and they drive me crazy.
You're not a cat guy?
Not a cat guy at all. I'm sure your cat is very nice. I just don't like the two that I have.
Whose call was that? The other the person who's actually running the house, or the kids, or?
Well, about 10 years ago, my kid was dating some girl, and they came home with these two rescue cats, and we were going to watch them for a couple days, and then they went to take them back, and everybody started to cry, so we kept them. I was at work. I didn't know about it. I come home, there's two cats running around. I go, what the hell are these things? But family overrided me, whatever you say, and we got cats for 10 years now.
What do you what'd you call them, Deshaun and Pierre?
Dirk and Socks. One has a little white foot, so we call her Socks, and then a guy we called Dirk.
All right,
we didn't know if it was a boy or girl, so we named her after Dirk Diggler.
You don't know if it's a boy or girl, so you named it after a movie porn star.
Once we found out, so we would remember. Yeah,
awesome. Fantastic. All right, well, Lenny, Lenny is the real star of this show. I just keep him hidden, so I need all the help I can get, so he's helpful for me. Let's talk about the actual stuff, the actual football. You know, we started obviously doing these podcasts at the beginning of the year, and for most of the time we've been talking about a team that was underwhelming, that was struggling, concerns about this, concerns about that. Here we are going into this week 13 game against the Giants. They are literally, Washington is literally the hottest team in the league, having won six of their last seven games. And, you know, we're all trying to piece together how this is happening. The defense is pretty obvious, but there's still questions on offense. Maybe I've asked you this over the last week or two, but for you, as you watch this thing, what's been the biggest difference, do you think, with why this team is now suddenly think they're winning games?
Well, they're playing efficiently on offense. They're not lighting it up on offense, obviously. The running game has been outstanding. Brian Robinson and Gibson, they've done a great job of moving the chains and protecting the football. And then defensively has been doing their thing of not giving up any big plays and making it very hard for the opposing offense. That combination of not turning the ball over, having a strong running game, keeps your defense fresh. Your defense is fresh, and they're able to make some plays. And by the end of the game, it's not going to be a blowout. Somebody's going to have to win on the goal line stand or get the ball in there at the end of the game somehow. And Washington's been fortunate enough to win some close games and be effective in the way they want them.
You know, as I watch these games, you know, look, the defense is playing very well, right? By the numbers they are, by the eye test they are. I know Atlanta got the best of them on the ground this week, and I want to ask you about that. But the defense has obviously played really well. Special teams as well. The offense, the running game has been better. They've been more consistent in staying with it. The passing game is still kind of underwhelming. And so when I will look at them in a vacuum, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it still doesn't feel like it's all that. But then you just look at around the league, and especially the NFC, I'm like, well, I don't know. Are any of these teams particularly impressive? I know you're watching, you know, a lot of the games on Sundays and so on. How do you look at them versus the rest of the NFC now that we have to consider them an actual playoff contender? Do you see a team that's still underwhelming or a team that's maybe more in line with the top teams in the league than maybe we think?
Yeah, I think when you look around the NFC, the league in general, I think teams are going to have their strengths. They're going to have their weaknesses. The really good teams, their strengths are really, really good, and their weaknesses aren't as bad. Washington, obviously, their weakness is the ability to throw the ball down the field, all that stuff, but they don't have to right now because their running game has been effective. Their strengths is their defensive line play and the way they're playing defense and the way they're protecting the ball on offense and running the game. So when you have the strength of a running game and a good, strong defense, you have the opportunity to be in every game, without a doubt. Now, something happens where you play a high-powered offense and you get down 14 and nothing, you have to throw the ball earlier than you wanted to, then you're going to have problems. But if they keep games close, I don't see anybody in the NFC that can just run away. They already proved they can beat Philly. They already proved that they can stand toe-to-toe with Minnesota, right? They got a chance to do it against San Francisco, and they'll get another chance against Dallas last game of the year. And now these next two games against the Giants will be important because the Giants will try to exploit their run defense, if that's an issue, if Atlanta did do that last week. But we'll see how they handle Saquon. But I firmly believe they should be able to play with every team in the NFC the way they play defense and the way they run the ball.
I mean, this is such more of an old school type deal. And obviously the league this year has been trending more towards running the ball. You know, some of the metrics showed, you know, some numbers or some attempts going, you know, looking more like the 1980s than they do the last decade. You know, you run the ball, you move the clock, you shorten the game. This is more or less what teams were doing back then. So it's so fascinating to see this really kind of unfolding again now in 2022. And of course the question is, are they going to be able to keep it up with the quarterback? But let's talk about the running back. This was Brian Robinson's breakout game. Months and, you know, way back when, before the free agency, before the draft, I talked about that this team, don't be surprised if they look for a running back who gives them that grinded out ability, because Antonio Gibson, good as he is, just not that type of player. And last year they found a formula that seemed to work when they were able to keep the, you know, dominate time of possession, helps the defense, etc. Obviously Robinson, you know, we know his story and why he was not on the field the first 4 weeks and took some time. I sent you one clip of him of one of his runs where he's like, you know, just running over defenders. He won't be stopped. Looks like he stopped finally. They said, no, I'm not. I keep going. What stood out to you about watching him, especially in this last game?
Well, I think what stood out to me all along is his ability to make positive yards out of no yards. And he's very seldom. I can't remember the last time Washington's been in a second and 11 or a third and long play if they give the ball to Bryant. He gets them in positive down into second and 7, second and 6, second and 5. Those are huge confidence boosters for your coordinator to continue to call runs. If you're stuck in second and 11, I'll be damned if the coordinator is going to call a run on next first down. You know, he's going to throw the ball. But being in those positive down and distances, which Bryant provides time in and time again, even if there's nothing blocked there, he pushes the pile and gets 3 yards. Second and 7 is a good play on first down. It's good for the coordinator, keeps them on track, and it gives them the confidence to call more and more runs, which Bryant provides. And I think that's what he's best at. Not so much the flashy big play guy, but the ability to get the positive yards, which enables your coordinator to stay on track and your offense to be able to be in positive down and distances.
Yeah, 18 carries last week. All of them went for positive yardage. Even if it was only 1 yard, it went for positive yards, nothing, zero, or negative. Is that something, you obviously as coaches, you guys, you know, try to help your players in different ways? Is what he is doing from that ability to fall forward, sort of this ability to get the extra yard, is that something you can coach a guy up to, or is that one of those innate abilities that you, some guys just have it and some guys don't?
Yeah, some guys have it, some guys don't, to be honest with you. Some guys will always try to make a big play and bounce it out, and a lot of things happen when you bounce it outside. Either it's a negative play, sometimes you'll get a big play out of, or it's going to be a holding call on somebody on offense. And that drives a coordinator crazy, drives a coach crazy. And then that'll stop the confidence in calling the next run. Brian, I keep telling you, these runs for 3 and 4 yards, the coach, the offensive line, the tight ends, they all like to run the ball. They like to force their will on their opponent. And the best way to do that is running the ball between the tackles. Guys get up high five and they get mud on their jerseys. They love it. And coaches will continue to call the run if we're making positive yards, and that's what Brian's doing for him.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's been wildly impressive, obviously, just for his personal journey, but just seeing this team go. And it's not like he's getting like these massive holes or anything. It's not like Emmitt Smith back in the day where, you know, it felt like you could drive a truck through the hole that Dallas was creating for him. He's having to grind it out. And I'm not saying the offensive line is not helping, but just he's really having to do a lot there. And, you know, I think the combination with him and Gibson, who gives you that explosive ability on the perimeter, is really working for sure. Anything else that's, while we're on the offense, that stood out to you, whether it's the line or the fact that, like, you know, Heinicke had a really good drive on the first drive, gets the touchdown, and then he really was not that very effective in the passing game after that. Was there anything else from the offense that kind of stood out to you one way or the other?
No, not really. I think they are who they are. And if they want to win games, I think Heinicke needs to throw the ball between 18 and 25 times, period. And they need to hand the ball off between 25 to 35 times for them to have a chance to win. If they ask in Tyler or Taylor to do – Taylor Heinicke. If they ask him to do anything more than that, I think they'll be in trouble. But the way they're playing football right now is a perfect recipe for them to have success later on. And their tight ends are getting more involved in the passing game, and they're doing a much better job at the point of attack in the running game as well.
I showed you the clip of his interception from the end zone view. He obviously it was a bad call on the pass where it went. He did ultimately have two guys underneath, and Gibson and Samuel, I believe, sort of running across each other short. But I was asking you, do you think he couldn't see them, or they were like too late in developing and he just was sort of, because it was only like less than 30 seconds and a half, he's thinking, I'm sure I want to make the bigger play to get into field goal range. We talk about his height sometimes. Do you think he just couldn't see them, perhaps?
I think what happened was he was reading the safety, and the safety got some depth, so he was going to go try to hit that crosser right in front of the safety. So as soon as he crossed the first initial linebacker, he goes, I got him, and he let it go, and he didn't see the backside linebacker, the backside hook player get his depth, and he threw it right to him. That happens from time to time. I remember Kirk threw an interception on the same exact play when his against Tennessee or St. Louis at the end of the half, and I pulled him and put Colt McCoy in there for that same exact play. That play, you know, sometimes the quarterbacks just don't see that weak side hook player, and that's what happened to Heinicke, and he'll learn from that. But that ball definitely should have been checked down, and he'll definitely check it down next time.
Fair enough. I'll get to the defense in a second, but I don't think I've talked to you at all, really, about Tress Way, who is one of the holdovers from when you were here. And, you know, I don't think we take him for granted, because the running joke is that he's the team MVP, like always. And not, you know, typically that's not said in a great way. You know, like, he's good, but like, you don't want your punter being the MVP. But he's just been it's just remarkably efficient. You know, he's second, I believe, in the league in kick, you know, punts inside the 20, tied for first in punts that ended up being fair caught. He's like seventh in net. And then, of course, there's just his personality. He is just a fun guy to be around. At least it seemed like it from our perspective. Yeah. What about Tress Way, and just how valuable of a weapon is he as the punter?
He's unbelievable valuable. I mean, he can back you up. He can flip the field. Not many punters can do what he can do as far as the ability to do both. Flipping the field if you're backed up, getting yourself in good field position, or pinning a team back consistently. And he doesn't care about his stats. He will punt the ball inside the 20-yard line and not bat an eye. He's a great team guy. He's a great person. He's a great athlete. He's a really good golfer. His ping pong ability is ridiculous. I love the guy. He's a great guy, great family guy. And when you see somebody like that have success, it makes you feel good all over.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the ping pong. When the ping pong table no longer exists, but when it was there, like, some guys would get on the table and they look like the regular hacker, like most of us. When Tress would get on there there was the special teams guy with him and Nick Sundberg and Dan Hopkins in particular, it was like you're watching like an ESPN, the Ocho or something down the line. Like, these guys were really at a high level. Now they have cornhole, and you won't be shocked. The guy who I believe has still not lost, according to last time I heard this, is Tress Way. He's still.
That's not shocking. He's an unbelievable athlete. Yeah. Every time I go to a restaurant or a bar that has a ping pong table, these guys are sweating and they think they're really good. I always think to myself, man, I wish Tress Way would come down here and beat these guys.
Well, when I was working at NBC Sports Washington back in the day, they had at one point they had a ping pong table in the lobby, just, you know, kill some time, whatever. And there were a couple guys in the office who were really good. And then one day, for whatever reason, Tresh Way showed up, and these guys who were at the top of the food chain in the office got absolutely smoked by him. It was it was hilarious. I guess special teams in general, Washington is like I think it's like third or fourth in just like overall special teams DVOA according to Football Outsiders. I don't know how much you can really tell on television watching this, and I haven't really asked you about this, but like what's your sense of their special teams overall? The return game is kind of whatever, but like the coverage and things like that doesn't get discussed a lot. But you know, obviously it's important, but what have you noticed anything in particular about that? And for this group that's going to grind out offense, how important is that for this team?
I know Coach Katzer pretty well. I hired him. He's a great special teams coach. When you play games like this, the way they're winning games, a touchdown here, a field goal here, special teams becomes critical. You give up a big play on special teams, you can't recover sometimes. It flips momentum and puts your team in a bad, bad spot mentally and obviously in the game. So they've been very good at when they punt, they cover well, they back teams up, and they make teams go 85 yards against that defense. That's the recipe for success. If you get a block punt or you give up a punt return back to your own 20-yard line, I mean, that's just like getting punched in the gut right in the middle of the game. And for them to continue to be consistent on special teams is going to be critical moving forward.
Let's go to the other side, the defense. Again, this was the rare game that the opponent was able to run the ball on Washington. They had been obviously, like second, third in the league in run defense over the last, during this winning stretch. You knew Atlanta coming in was going to try to run. That doesn't mean you'll be successful. They definitely were. Three different people, including quarterback Marcus Mariota, had at least 49 yards on the ground. What did you notice about what Atlanta was doing that was working? And then I guess to that end, is there something there that was some of that teams that they're going to Washington will play going forward can recognize okay, this is how you beat them? Or was this more unique, you think, to Atlanta?
I think more unique to Atlanta. Not many teams can line up in two and three tight end sets anymore in pro football. The lack of tight end play around the league is really quite alarming, in my opinion. Atlanta has two or three tight ends, and they lined up in a couple, two and three tight end sets, and Washington still played a two shell, which is surprising to me. I guess they're a little concerned over London, number 17, which really is difficult to defend when you're playing a two shell against those three tight end sets, because you get a hat on a hat, and you can get your double teams working up to the linebacker quite effectively, and that's what happened there. I think Washington was kind of in a bend but don't break mode when they saw that personnel. Hey, we'll give them 3 or 4 yards and eventually Mariota will throw it and make a mistake and we'll get off the field. But yeah, you're going to have to probably be a little bit more aggressive if the Giants have those two and three tight end sets by bringing your safety down in the box and getting an extra player in there. Otherwise, Saquon will run for 150 in the first quarter if you don't do that.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, it's not like the Giants are a high powered offense themselves. It's a lot of Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones. And that's why I was kind of wondering could New York see something that Tennessee did and take advantage of that?
If the Giants have that three tight end set, two and three tight end sets, I used to call it Trey, three tight ends, which used to put teams really in a pickle because defensive coordinators don't have a big call sheet for that personnel grouping, three tight ends, one back and one receiver. And when that one receiver was like a Pierre Deshaun and three tight ends were Jordan Reed, Sprinkle, and Vernon Davis. I mean, teams didn't know what to do. They couldn't play nickel. They had to play base. And then we spread them out. And it's a great tight end. It's a great grouping to attack defenses. But not many teams have that many tight ends that are good enough to do that.
To whatever degree you've been paying attention to the Giants and Daniel Jones this year, I'm curious your thoughts. Whenever he's played Washington, he looks like he's, I don't know. Pick your all-star quarterback. I was going to say Phil Simms, but whatever. He's like seems way better than he does when he's playing everybody else. It feels like the Giants coaching staff has done a pretty good job of making him as effective as possible. What have you seen from him? Because I guess on some level, again, you talk about the quarterback matchups. Whatever we want to say about Taylor Heinicke, is he really that much different than Daniel Jones? I don't know, but that's what I'm asking you. What are you kind of seeing from him?
Well, he's getting better. I think the more people you put around him that are pretty good, that'll help them. I mean, obviously Saquon's a great player, but the receiving core has been fluctuated throughout his whole career. They don't really have that go-to guy or that big time tight end. And Daniel's still been pretty effective. And obviously Brian Daboll does a great job with them as far as moving them outside the pocket, working some zone reads, some naked bootlegs where he can keep it or run it, getting them in positions to be successful. Now they've had trouble the last couple of weeks when they've been in known passing situations, like a lot of teams are nowadays. When they're in known passing situations, they can't protect and they don't got the bodies to get open down the field. But if they stay in a game close, like they will against, it's going to be a close game against Washington. Daniel has the capabilities to use his legs and hurt you and to throw the ball and hurt you. And then obviously Saquon's threat of running the ball will eventually, I think, force Washington to play more single safety defenses, which will enable the Giants to take more shots down the field.
I'm going to ask you what you think is going to happen in this game in a second. I forgot to ask you, though, at the top, the Brian Robinson big hat.
Yeah.
Would you like one? You know, I feel like I should get, you know, when we're getting here to the holidays, you know, you've been kind enough to come on here. I feel like I should get you a gift. Would you like the big hat as your gift?
I would like a big hat. You know, those things are pretty – I got some friends of mine that have really big heads that always make fun of their heads. So I'd love to get them one of those just for a good Christmas gag bonus.
I mean, but he's wearing it, like, for real. Like, that's the part, like, yeah. I was like, wait a minute. Like, and
I think that's more of a practical joke gift more than a stylish gift that I'd wear out to a club or something or a bar or a restaurant or to a game. I don't think I'd wear – I mean, it'd be uncomfortable, too. You'd be bumping into people next to you, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the thing that kind of jarred me about that, like if I saw a fan wearing that at a game, I'd be like, oh, okay, that's kind of.
What if you sat behind and you couldn't see the game?
Yeah, right. That would be.
You don't want that. You don't want to sell that hat at a football game, for God's sakes. People will be getting in fights in the stands. Take your hat off. Sit down in front. Yeah.
Right. Right. Can you imagine? That'd be hilarious. And by the way, what do you think about Taylor Heineke's move where after every time he wins, he goes out and buys a pair of Jordans in the color of the team? He's not like making a big deal about it. Like he's not like per se talking trash about the team he just beat, but there's something there. What do you think about that move?
I think it's pretty cool. Actually, that's a great idea. So he bought the Falcons colors in a Jordan shoe.
Yeah. He's been doing that.
And he probably will never wear them. He just collects them. Those things will be worth something. I mean, at least they got some value later on. I don't know why people want to buy shoes that are, you know, later on in life, how they're collector's items. But yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. He said he'd been doing it now for a bit. And we all just caught up to it a few weeks ago. He's now been buying Jordans also for like the offensive line and the running backs, things like that. So
I have money already. Good for him.
Well,
Jordans,
I guess
they're not right. They're aren't they like between $200 and $500 a pair and some of them more than that.
You know, I have weird feet things. I just stick with boring New Balance. So I don't even know what Jordan's cost and all that. But yeah, it's not like $50. He's getting a pair of Marshalls or something.
I think I'm still wearing the free shoes I got from Washington about 2 years ago.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. All right. So this game, I don't typically ask you to make predictions, but this is a huge game, right? If Washington wins, they go ahead of the Giants in the playoff standings. If they lose, now they're a game and a half behind New York. They will play them, of course, again after the bye in this weird setup where they're playing them in back-to-back games. But a huge game on the road, this one. What's your sense of what's going to happen?
Well, both teams win exactly the same way, in my opinion. You know, I think the Giants, early on in the season, they caught some people by surprise. They play a lot better defense than people anticipated them to play. Their defensive coordinator is an excellent coach. They will play good, sound defense, and it'll make it hard on Washington to move the ball and vice versa, the same thing. I think it's going to be a close, hard-fought game. A special team play will be a key. A turnover will be a key. And, of course, you can never discount those striped jerseys, guys, making a horrific call or some kind of call that'll change the momentum of the game. And you look back on it, do you believe that call? Well, that call didn't cost – yeah, it did cost us the game. There'll be a call like that in the game. So those three things, I think it'll come down to a field goal, probably be like 20-17, something of that nature. And the team that protects the ball the best will win.
But you don't want to say which team that's going to be?
No. I mean, I think Washington has the better team all around, really. If you really think about it, they have better receiving core. You know, their backs are not as good as Saquon, but they're comparable. They're as effective right now. The quarterbacks are close, although Daniel Jones got, you know, he's bigger, can throw the ball further and can run better. So I'd probably give the edge to Daniel. The offensive lines are comparable. The defensive line, Washington's better. Linebacker's probably the Giants. Secondary's probably the Giants. So it's going to be a close game.
Yeah, no, it should be. It would be stunning if anybody wins by more than one score.
That'd be like I said, unless there's some special teams, punt blocks, kickoff return for touchdown, or a lot of turnovers, which both teams have tinkered around with the ability to turn the ball over a lot. Daniel will throw the ball to the other team and fumble, and same with Heineke. So that's going to be the key.
Fair enough. Jay, always appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk next week, and we'll see where we're at with this group.
You got it. Thanks, Ben. See ya.
See ya.